And we're looking at the letter of James and a number of issues, and James is presenting this with the idea of course, faith behind everything. And how is your faith? And then there's a number of issues here to see how our faith's doing in light of some of these things. Now, it's unlikely that any of us will face all of these issues, but we'll probably face some. Tonight, here in the series, we're looking at James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. What is it that we all possess, that we all are to have control of, that we have difficulty in controlling, and that brings us more problems than anything else? Well, that would be the tongue. And, of course, that's used metaphorically. It's not really the tongue's problem itself. It's what the tongue produces. Words, language, other things like that. And James is speaking at some length about the tongue in this section. Now, he did say something back in verse 19 of chapter 1, but here we're seeing it over here. There's more. And so what's said in James is very practical, and it's also very valuable to us. So how is your faith when it comes to the tongue? Now, the first thing I'd like for us to do, if we were going to look at some place that would have a lot of things to say about the tongue also, that would be the book of Proverbs. So let's go back to Proverbs for a minute. Go back to Proverbs chapter 10. We're not going to look at everything in the book of Proverbs, but we're going to look at a few things in the book of Proverbs that addresses more or less the tongue or what we say and other things along that line. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 8 has this: The wise of heart will receive commands, but a babbling fool will be ruined. And then verse 19, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. So what's this saying here? Well, I think in those two verses, what you're seeing, well, what's implied here is that there's a time to be silent, you know. Not too much on this. The babbling and the other thing, and of course restraining the lips, that kind of thing. Now, if you go over to Proverbs chapter 17, and we'll take a look at verses 27 and 28. Proverbs 17, 27, 28. He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent. And chapter 21, verse 23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles. Well, what do we see with these here? Well, trouble can be avoided with silence. Well, certainly that's true when it comes to the tongue. And then there's Proverbs 29, verse 20. Do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Well, what's that one say? Well, now this is kind of my way of explaining it here. Make sure the brain is running before engaging the mouth. Well, a lot of times that doesn't happen, you know. We just talk without thinking and get ourselves into all kinds of problems. Back to chapter 15, back up to chapter 15, and we'll take a look at verse 1. This one, I think, is familiar to a lot of people. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. and chapter 18, verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. So what's it saying there? Well, it can be a blessing or a curse. And I think we understand all these points, you know, that are in Proverbs there. When it's talking about the tongue, speech, other things along that line. And of course, there are many other things that we could look at. Now, if you go back to James chapter 3. And we're going to consider verses 1 through 12. Now, verse 1 has some bearing on this, but it's, "Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment." Or, older translation has, "a greater condemnation." I wonder sometimes, it's possible that this would be talking about the judgment day and matters that take place then. But also at the same time, I don't think that this completely is out of the question to think that this might refer to what happens now. When a person does become a teacher, you make yourself, you assume a position where there is a stricter judgment or more severe condemnation. There's criticism and other things that go along like that. Now, it could be either way. But one thing's for sure, if it's the latter, then you can understand how the tongue factors in even more. Because, of course, with a teacher, you're teaching. It's what you're saying. It's what, you know, what you're doing when you teach with language and words and explanations. And then if it is the idea of receiving criticism now, well, there's other people that criticize, and they do that with the tongue as well. So anyway, there's that. Now, I know when you get to verse 2, that's where it starts. And you can easily see that verses 2 through 12 actually is an analysis about the tongue or speech. Now, verse 2, that's the first one we want to look at. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Now, one of the things that you find out, you look at that, and I think you go back here to verse 26, and you can see a connection back there. If a person doesn't bridle his tongue, he deceives his own heart, and his religion is worthless or vain. And we should be seeking the pure and undefiled religion. And part of that is not to stumble in speech, but we should also recognize that such a thing happens. So what verse 2 actually does, it kind of introduces the tongue here. And there may be a lot of ways in which we offend someone. Now, by that doesn't mean we just upset someone or someone just doesn't like what's said. The word offend in the New Testament actually means you cause someone to stumble. You become a stumbling block. So your speech becomes a stumbling block to prevent others from following the faith. That's what it really means. And the one way in which we offend some others, and I think it's uniformly manifest, is with the tongue. I don't think there's any question about that. And so the person then who can bridle the tongue, as he says here, has overcome a great obstacle himself and has control of the situation. And that's a mark of maturity. You know, it says there that if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, complete. A lot of times the word that's translated as perfect is a word that's translated other places meaning mature. Certainly it would be a mark of maturity to have good control of one's tongue. No question about that at all. No argument about that, I don't think. Now, next comes verses 3 through 5. If we put the bits into the horse's mouths so that they obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. So what you have here is that great things like a horse and a ship are turned or controlled by a smaller bit and rudder. Horse is a, you know, sizable animal, and yet a bit, you know, is only going to be about so much. And they put that in a horse's mouth, and that pretty well controls the horse. And rudders, now we're not talking about, you know, big ships like we might think today, like might be up here on the lake. But ships in their day were, you know, sizable, and yet even though they were sizable, driven by the wind, there's a limit to how big a ship would be like that. The rudder was small in comparison to the rest of the ship, and yet it turned the ship. And even the big ships that exist now, you know, they're turned by the rudder. Maybe not fast turns, but they're turned nevertheless. And the idea is here, is that our whole makeup, you know, body and soul, is turned or controlled by the tongue. It says at the end of verse 5, "See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire." You think about that. You know, we've had some terrible fires in this country over the years, and I saw on the news that there's one right now raging out in California. They had pictures of people that were running from their houses. I think it's in Santa Clarita, which is, I'm guessing, 30, 40 miles west of where my sister lives. But there's been fires up there where she lives at countless numbers of times. And I can remember being down in Florida when they were having brush fires down there, and it got so bad that the interstate was shut down because of the smoke. And I'm pretty sure that we all are aware that in Chicago in 1871 there was what was called the Great Fire. But no matter what those are, if they're brush fires or if it's a fire like in Chicago where it burnt down a great part of the city, they all start off with just a little bit. They all start off small. A forest fire, it says here, set aflame by some. You know, it's not really just talking about fires and one thing. It's talking about the tongue being a small fire. And you see that in verse 6. And think about, you know, the damage that can be done by fires. And what about the damage that can be done by a tongue? Well, that's equally, you know, problematic. Verse 6, "The tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body, and sets on fire the course of our life, and is set on fire by hell." Well, it goes without saying that the tongue is a problem, and it can cause one to lose one's soul. That's what he's trying to get across here. Don't minimize it. Don't think that it's nothing. It actually is something. It's not just mere words of little consequence. You know, our words are matters of great consequence. Verses 7 and 8, I think, are kind of ironic. "Every species of beasts and birds, reptiles, creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison." It's ironic, you know. You can tame wild beasts, but you can't tame the tongue. I think that the idea there is to how difficult this is. And again, perhaps this is to get across that, well, you can't do it alone. Psalm 141, verse 3, is actually a petition along this line, I think, that fits in well here, where the psalmist says, "Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips." Well, perhaps we think that we can't do it all alone, and so there's the problem. Well, we need some help. We need a little bit of divine intervention. You know, we should go to God and pray for this. And perhaps some intervention can come along. Verses 9 through 12. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. Well, what do you see here? Well, you see here some contrast is what you see. You think about perhaps something along this line. There's someone who's blessing God in the assembly, and then later on gets over to the restaurant, and the person who was blessing God starts cursing the driver who darts into the last parking spot in the parking lot. Well, that'd be quite the contrast, wouldn't it? And you think to yourself, well, that shouldn't happen. And that's right, it shouldn't happen. But unfortunately, sometimes it does happen. We're reminded over here, I think we've said something about this before, but Matthew chapter 15, if you turn over there. Matthew chapter 15, verses 17 through 20. Do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is eliminated? But the things that proceed out of the mouth, that would be our tongue, that would be our speech, that would be our words, come from the heart, and those defile the mouth. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man. All the interest that was going into this business of washing the hands, that begins back at verse 2. And being so concerned about that and not about other things, and not to realize, you know, what it really was, that's the problem. Whatever's in the bucket is in the well. You lower a bucket down into the well, whatever's down in there, when you pull that bucket up, the same thing's in the bucket. That's what's down there in the well. So what's ever in the well, right here, in the inner man, in the heart, a lot of times it's going to be where? Right there in the bucket, right there in the mouth. And we can understand that kind of a thing. Now here's something else. How about over in Acts chapter 8? Let's look over there for just a second. Acts chapter 8. It's the case of Simon. We call him Simon the sorcerer, don't we? Philip down in Samaria, and all the things that were going on. And this Simon kind of enters into the picture almost in a offhanded way, but then he becomes a focal point. And what he did here was a problem. Simon had been a magician, and by that means he was a trickster. He'd learned these ways of deceiving people and making it seem like things he was doing were by magic. And he sees the apostles laying on hands and the Holy Spirit being given. What exactly he saw, I don't know, but that's what it says. And he offers money for this. Now, that's likely what he had done before. To learn some of the tricks of his trade, he had paid people money to teach him how to do whatever it was. And so he's kind of doing what he's used to here. But that's a problem, because this wasn't a trick. It wasn't something that was to be sold. And in verse 21, verse 21. Peter tells Simon, "You have no part or portion in this matter, for your heart is not right before God." I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind that the last half of that verse are the bold words. Your heart is not right before God. I guess this is kind of like last week. I wonder to myself when I see something like this, do you suppose Peter got the memo on not judging? You know, oh, you're not supposed to judge. That's in some people's minds, that's just the worst thing. Well, is that what he's doing here? Well, you'll have to figure that out. It seems to me like that's what he's doing. And yet it's the truth of the matter. His heart's not right in the sight of God. But how did he know that? Did he have some power where he could see into the inner man, into the heart? Or could he do something like out of a science fiction movie and read Simon's mind? How did he do this? How did he know that his heart wasn't right in the sight of God to make such a determination? I think the answer is a little bit easier than what we think. Look back here at verse 19. See, this is what Simon said. Give me this authority. Give this authority to me as well, that everyone on whom I lay my hands may receive the Holy Spirit. Now that's how Peter knew what was on Simon's mind. Because Simon opened his mouth and said this. And that's how he's able to make such a determination. And then what else do you find down here in verse 24? You see that Simon comes around on this now. And down in verse 24 he answers and said, pray to the Lord for me yourselves, so that nothing of what you have said may come upon me. Well, good for him that he came around. It appears as though he was repenting of his actions, and here he's making a confession about it, isn't he? But that's coming out of his mouth as well. And that's how you would know that he's turned things around. You wouldn't be able to see inside of him or read his mind or anything like that. You'd pretty well go by what he said. And I think that we can understand that point. And then the last part, down there in Acts chapter 3, when it talks about the fig tree and the olives and all that and everything, the fig tree and vines and that kind of thing, you got the idea. You know, a fig tree doesn't have olives, an olive tree doesn't have figs on it, and a grapevine doesn't have what? It doesn't produce figs. We understand that. If we were to walk out to the garden and go out where the corn's at, and here's a corn stalk and there's a pumpkin on it, we'd think to ourselves, there's something wrong here. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. Well, that's right. And, you know, salt water doesn't produce fresh, whatever it says in there. And you realize that it's like begets like. And so the mouth out of which comes blessing, there ought to be the blessing that reveals what's in the heart, and the cursing that reveals what's in the heart as well. So that's about what you see here in James chapter 3 about the tongue in verses 1 through 12. But now I think there's lots of things. Not only do we learn from this and think about this, if we think about this soberly and seriously, I think we learn a lot of things about the tongue. And I think also we learn a lot of things about the tongue, you know, practically speaking as well. So I've got here things I've learned about the tongue, and I've learned them, and I think that we all have probably learned some of these, if not all of them, ourselves. Look at verse 19 in James chapter 1. Mentioned this a moment ago. And he says, this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Now what I've learned is that I've got a tongue. I was thinking about an episode on the Andy Griffith show. And it kind of went like this, wasn't the tongue, it's about the back of the throat. And he said, I'll just paraphrase, I got a tongue, you got a tongue, all God's children got a tongue. Yeah, we've all got one, don't we? And we can probably think of cases where it's caused us a lot of grief. And we probably can think in those cases, I wish I'd thought about this before I opened my mouth. Yeah, oh boy, isn't that the truth of it? And so instead of being quick to hear and slow to speak, we become slow to hear and quick to speak. We kind of get it backwards. I think I can say this, you know, freely, and I think we understand how this goes. There are lots of times, myself and with other people, I really wish that there was more listening going on and less talking. I think there's lots of times when people are talking and they're not doing any listening. And honestly, if somebody's not doing any listening, if they're not listening, you can't get anywhere with them. Martha and I were talking about a case like this on the way home after lunch. You can't do it if they're not listening. And it doesn't take very long to find out they're not listening. You're not getting anywhere. And if they just repeat the same thing over and over and over again, they're not really listening, are they? No. But sometimes people don't listen at all. They'd rather just talk, you know. And those frustrating cases where somebody's not listening, they're just thinking of the next thing they're going to say instead of, you know, maybe listening a little bit. That's sad. And then another thing, go back to the book of Proverbs here, the Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 3 this time. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 3, "The one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips come to ruin." Every time I look at that, I think about this, you know, that there's someone who just has to say something. That's just not a very good example to follow. One time we were living in West Virginia, another man and I went up the river to New Martinsville for a gospel meeting. And we left pretty early. You never knew on that road up there, Route 2 is what it was. You never knew what travel was going to be on that. You know, you might go up there and make pretty good time, then you might get behind the, I can't remember what that was one time. It was the Tennessee Pride Pure Whole Hog Sausage Truck. We got behind that thing one time, and it went about 30 miles an hour all the way up there. And we were going to Payton City, and we had plenty of time, but unfortunately that truck, and there's no place to park. He pulled off like 2 miles from the building. Wow. And we got in there just about the time that the speaker got up, you know, to start his sermon. But anyway, we were going up to New Martinsville, and we got there, and we did real good. No obstacles or anything. We got there early. There were like two people and the preacher there when we got there. So we talked to the preacher there a little bit. And then one of their members came in. And he started talking to the preacher, so we went up and got a seat. Now this man that came in was talking so loud you could have heard him out in the middle of the street out by the building. And he was talking about meeting someone downtown and having a conversation with them. And he said, I really just didn't know what to say. But I felt like I had to say something. So I said this. And I thought to myself, well, that sounds ill-conceived. You know. But that's what happens. Sometimes people just have to say something. And a lot of times, that's just a disaster looking for a place to happen. But that's a problem with the tongue. Now also, I've learned that how you say something is just as important as what you are saying. Let your speech be seasoned with salt, there in Colossians chapter 4, verse 16. Let it be with gracious words, you know, so others will want to hear you, in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. You know, we shouldn't be wanting to talk to someone, and no matter what the subject is when we're talking to someone, that it sounds like, well, we're scolding them or something. Or we're chewing them out. And this might happen without realizing it. Well, we need to work on it then a little bit. And maybe not be so free with this until we get a better handle on it. Sure, fine. But it does matter how you say something as to what you might say. You might say something that's exactly right, but say it in such a way that it just, you know, throws away all the good that could happen. The passage about the tongue, well, one of the things about the tongue in Ecclesiastes, you know, we're familiar with the words in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, aren't we? Probably because back in the 60s, this was a popular song. I think it was called To Everything, or it was called Turn, 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 whichever. But you get to verse 7, And the last half of verse 7 says, a time to be silent and a time to speak. Well, Ecclesiastes is a book of wisdom. Sure it is. And wouldn't wisdom entail knowing when to be silent, knowing when to speak? Yeah, it would. But let me point out sometimes that we have a problem doing that. And so sometimes the best thing that you could do with a tongue is bite it. You know, don't let it run off out of control. Now, I also know, I got several passages here. We're just going to look at one. You might turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 15. I also know that gossip and slander will kill a church. They'll just kill it. As well as the other things that we've already talked. They'll just kill a church. Faster than anything you can imagine. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 15, make sure that none of you suffer as a murderer. Well, that'd be good. Or a thief. That'd also be good. Or an evildoer. Yeah. Or a troublesome meddler. There's other translations that have a meddler in other men's matters. Some might even have busybody there. We need to be careful on that kind of a thing and not get involved in something that we really don't have any business in. Now, it would be fine if someone asks us for advice and we give the advice in situations like this. But there are times when we shouldn't get involved. And again, it's wisdom to know the difference. I think one of the things that happens too often is when there are two people, you know, A and B have a problem, and B won't go talk to A about it. B goes out here and gets C to come in and talk to A. And C may think that they're doing a wonderful and marvelous thing and helping out. Are they? No. I don't think that they're doing all that great a thing, because really, if A and B have the problem, it ought to remain with A and B. We shouldn't be going out here and trying to get a hired gun, so to speak, to settle our matters for us. But unfortunately, that's what a lot of times we do. And if we don't do that, our other alternative is to get on the telephone or email or text messages and discuss everything about the situation with whoever, except discussing it with either A or B. So gossip and slander, they're problems. Now, I also know on the positive part of this, which kind of goes along with everything that we're talking about here, is that with the tongue, we're supposed to speak the truth in love. We're supposed to know the truth and what it is. And we're supposed to speak it in love. And we're supposed to get across that idea that it was out of love. If we think that we follow Jesus, we follow His example, and we would speak the truth in love, there's nothing to be gained from a person who's striving to win an argument for the sake of winning the argument. I've been to a number of debates over the years. It's been a long time since I've been to one. They're pretty rare anymore. But back when I was first in the church, they were there were still a number of them around. I don't know where it's at. Well, we don't have more of those. But anyway, we just don't. But I know I've gone to some, and the idea was in the debate. I got the idea in the debate. The idea was to get to the truth and to see where the truth's at on this matter. And I think that when you do that, truth prevails. But I've also been to some where someone was just striving to win the debate. And you know what took a back seat? Truth took a back seat. The Lord took a back seat. And I think love took a back seat as well. So we need to think about all these things. The negative, the positive, and even the negative things that are said in such a way to make everything better. Take your songbooks, turn to the songs been selected. By way of invitation, if there would be one tonight that would have a desire to obey the gospel, we'd be happy to help you. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, if you would repent of your sins, if you confess Him before men, tonight you could do that. And if you'd be baptized, we'd be happy to help you in being baptized tonight. If you've done those things, you are a child of God. You've fallen by the wayside, things need to be corrected, we'd be happy to help you with that as well. Whatever the case might be, if you're subject to the gospel invitation, please come while together we stand and sing.